Well, for me, 2025 was an intense year. I got wrinkles after 2025.
That's just aging, my friend.
2025 was good for you, bro. You had your glow up year 2025.
Let's go, bro.
I'd say probably more learning lessons from 2025 than any other year. A lot of business stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of life stuff as well. I mean, the first thing I took away is, as cliche as it sounds, what you're living through right now is what you look back at and you're like, these are the good old times. I mean, even just this, bro, fly fishing in Scotland. Like, I mean the good times and the bad times. Like, it was interesting when we filmed the 2024 recap. Like, right after that, we were chilling in Maldives. Everything was good. Life was good. There was a big career progression that we were about to make.
Yeah.
And literally... Oh. No way. I f***ing hope it's a fish, bro.
Were you reading the other way?
Oh. I'm an idiot. Oh, I'm not a fishing expert like this. I'm a little better at spear fishing. Nope.
No, it was a rock.
It was a rock?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny. After that Maldives trip, we were on top of the world. Like, December 2024, right after we filmed our life lessons for 2024. We probably should have let the rest of the year happen before we filmed it. That was like, bro, that was a nightmare. That was a living nightmare. I felt like an episode out of Succession. Like, I was having to pull so many strings, trying to take the biggest L we ever had and turn it into a W, which we managed to do. But my point is, I even missed that. Like, I miss those times where you go to bed and you're like, I don't know what the f*** I'm doing here. Like, to me, those become the good old times. And even, like, driving over here, I was listening to Sonderson, an album from 2017. It just brings back so many memories of, like, bad times. But the times you look back at and you're like, f***, those really were the good old days.
Yeah, you can't enjoy the good without the bad. That's the cliche, but... it's the truth. Well, like you said, moments of reflection when you realize that everything just kind of panned out and worked out in your favor. If obviously you apply yourself, life's always going to be ups and downs.
I don't know. I know there's like a lot of people that watch our stuff and they are aspiring. They want more. They have a dream life that they have in mind. But all I would say is, you know, even when you talk about your upbringing, or I talk about my upbringing, or we talk about things that we went through and how those truly were, like, you miss it. Like, all I would say is to the people that are going through it right now is enjoy it. You know, a simple life. There's something like so beautiful about a simple life. Still strive and achieve and try to push for more, but no, just the bottom. Oh,
fucking hell.
Well, this is dangerous. I caught my nuts earlier.
So what else? What else did 2025 teach you?
I mean, 2025 was a massive year for us in terms of the businesses we bought stakes in. I think 2025 was really the year of why I valued and truly respected ownership. And I think also I became very settled as like, what is my entrepreneurial and business strategy? Like, I realized in 2025, at least for this stage of life, bro, I don't want to build a $1 billion company. I like owning large pieces of $1 billion companies. I think there was two things that happened, or two realizations. One was, I'm sure as you remember, at the end of 2023, we started working on a venture called Big Day. Then one day, our dear friend George, who owns Represent, him and Ross, called me over to a house in LA, and they were like, hey, basically like pitched me for an hour, like this beautiful pitch deck, this beautiful presentation. And they were like, we want you to come in as a third partner. And I was like, this looks amazing. This looks incredible. Sparkling electrolyte product. I mean, ours had a bit of caffeine in there. And then made a decision, like, had to make a decision. Okay, do we take 70% of our own venture, or do we take a much smaller cut, 33% of another venture? And, you know, it's interesting, when Big Day launched and Cadence launched, like, we were up and up, like, neck and neck in revenue for the first 9 months. Even Ross was wanting to merge. And then, you know, 2025, Cadence just went to a different level. And Big Day, we just couldn't give it the labor of love that we wanted from our side or our business partner's side. He's got so many other ventures going on. We have so many other ventures. So I think it really taught me, like, my philosophy now is I like to take, obviously you can't always make it work, but I like to buy anywhere from 5 to 20% of a company, anything more than 20%. And I just don't really want to be involved in the changing of a CRM or like really the minutia.
Yeah.
I want to be impactful where we can be impactful. And I think there was, of course, in 2024 and 2025, like so many companies that we managed to execute that strategy with that have done so well.
Yeah.
I think, of course, WAP being the biggest case of that. And then also, in 2025, I looked back at one of my old agency clients, Oura Ring. And, you know, I was 18 at the time. It was my first ever five-figure a month retainer. And I think I was just so gassed about it. I remember specifically, I charged them £7,800 a month because that equated to $10,000 a month. Harpreet, who was the CEO at the time, was like, oh, we can either give you, like, we can pay you your retainer, or we can give you the equivalent of in stock. And as I said, I was 18 at the time. I think I was just so gassed about finally having a five-figure month retainer. It was my first one that I was like, no, I'll take the retainer, yada, yada. I ran the calculation. And that stock, Oura Ring, is worth $11 billion right now. At a time in 2018 when I was presented that opportunity, that stock would have been worth, in today's terms, $19 million. So I worked with them for, they were clients for 9 months. I would have made the equivalent of $2 million a month.
That's crazy.
So I think...
How are you supposed to know that, you know?
No, you don't. And I think that's why we keep doing all these yearly recaps and these yearly life lessons. You know, I was 18, I was young and foolish, and I guess a little bit more short-sighted. And yeah, as time goes on, you start to realize, like, no one teaches you the value of ownership. And of course, that's not to say if you have a bad company that offers you, you know, 20% of nothing is still nothing. You need to be able to identify what are these good companies where even if you own 2, 3, 4, 5% in the long run, you know, owning 5% of Oura Ring or 2% or 1% of an Oura Ring, or, you know, for example, owning 5% of a WAP, once you run the numbers.
It's very hard when you come from very humble beginnings and you get presented with an opportunity to get immediate cash or play the long game. I don't think a lot of people want to play the long game when, like, to stop drowning, basically. Like, you're drowning for a long time and you get the opportunity to, like yourself, to, like, get a really good retainer. You're not really thinking of building a $30 million portfolio at the time. You're like, I just want to not worry about rent and live good for a bit and then take the next step.
Yeah, these are all learning lessons. And as you said, I think when you're first starting out, you have to think short term. You shouldn't be thinking long term, empire building, ownership plays.
Yeah.
Of course, as time has gone on, I guess the whole crux of this is I realized whether it's companies that I'm starting as a business partner, you know, for example, like would have been the case with Cadence, owning a smaller stake than what we ended up moving forward with Big Day, or buying into companies. I've just realized the importance of ownership. There's so many ways to get to your final destination in life. You just have to figure out what journey makes the most sense for what you're like as a person, what you want in life, what you don't want in life. A random Tuesday, we're here fishing.
Yesterday we were hunting.
Like, we wouldn't be able to do that if we were tried to start the next unicorn company.
Yeah.
Now we can own a massive stake in a unicorn company and still get away with it. I'll tell you one thing that was very interesting. It was one specific moment, and you actually know both of these people I'm going to reference. It was so, like, visceral when it happened. I realized that people hate people with emotion and justify it with logic. I mean, I saw it in 2024, for example, with, like, the Kendrick and Drake beef. I realized there's so many people that just hate Drake that don't necessarily like Kendrick. And in that beef, it was so interesting. Like, there was things being thrown at Drake that were never even proven, but just stuck. Like the whole pedo thing.
Yeah.
And it was just so interesting. I think that's a case study of you hate someone with emotion, but you justify with logic. Oh, you hate him because he invokes XYZ emotion in you. I've always known that with, I guess, a little bit less intelligent people or like the masses. But there was one specific moment in 2025 where, obviously we'll bleep out the name, like, we were sat outside.
Yeah.
At my home. Our chef had just prepared a beautiful dinner for us. We were with, it was four of us. And he was talking about,
yeah.
And he talked about him, and he's like, oh, he's a scammer. I was like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Now he was referencing, you know, this individual's family had some XYZ problems. Once again, his family, not him. And the problems with his family were nothing related to scamming or the problems were related to the government. Like,
yeah.
And I said to him, I was like, what do you mean he's a scammer? And he goes, yeah, he's a scammer. And I was like, well, I can tell you this individual has a business and I'm a client of his business. And not only is he operating the business, this is by far the best experience I've ever had with this kind of business anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Like, I even got so angry because I was just like, not only is he not a scammer, I've just seen how good he is at what he does.
Yeah.
And how much he gives a shit. And how much the family gives a shit. Because it's a family-run business. It was so interesting because in that moment, once again, this individual who said this is in the, like, highest echelon, like, socioeconomic echelon.
Yeah.
I get it with the masses because they're very rife with emotion and they can't think clearly. But to see someone who's at, like, the pinnacle, the peak, still say that and not have a justification for it, it was just such an interesting moment because I realized you just don't like the guy. But you can't say...
You don't like him.
You don't like him because then that reflects poorly on you.
Yeah.
Because if you don't like someone for no reason, then it's like, okay, there's something wrong with you. Like, what is it about them that gives you such a visceral reaction? Or what is it about them that makes you hate them? So then you have to find a reason to justify it with logic, even if the logic makes no sense.
Yeah,
I think that moment as well for me was very visceral and it was very eye-opening, but also made me feel a little better because, bro, I mean, we're definitely not everyone's cup of tea. And there's so many things that get thrown, labels, names, things that get thrown at us that are so easily disproven, and I've disproven.
And you don't need to keep on doing it, bro.
And I just realized at a certain point, bro, I don't like to talk like this because that's not really my energy of being braggadocious. I think there's a lot of people online that like to be super, I'm this and I'm that and blah, blah, but like, I'll call it how it is. We have everything and more that anyone could ever want. And the most important thing is we do it gracefully and we do it humbly. And anyone who's ever met us, but actually met us, not posted on Twitter, oh, I was with Iman Gadji in Mykonos. Or my friend told me I was with Iman Gadji in Mykonos and he ran away from a $60,000 table bill. And it's like, okay, well, first things first, I've never been to Mykonos. So that's a start. And second, anyone knows, like, if you're gonna hit me with anything, just don't hit me with the, he runs away from the bill, because people know that I have friends substantially wealthier than me. I pay for everyone. All the time, always, even if you're wealthier.
Very true.
And it's funny, even like the comments, people are like, bro, you clearly don't know the guy. Like, I'm sorry. All that to say, you know.
Connoissance of people on Twitter, bro.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
I know, Twitter's a horrible place, bro. It's
faceless dorks.
Yeah, as anyone who's ever met us, we have what every single person on earth wants. Also including, by the way, like genuine companionship.
Yeah.
And love and friendship.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, you know, because you know, some people have everything in life and they feel empty inside. I have everything in life and I feel so incredibly grateful.
Amen.
For the love and companionship and friendship that we have, not only with work, we love the people we work with, we love the people we hang out with. Romantically, of course, we've both been very blessed to just have such amazing women.
Yeah.
In our lives, even just this morning, bro, I got a text from my mom. I was actually thinking about it. Of course, I never had a father figure in my life. Like, I don't know what that's like. But I was looking at, like, some of the stuff my mom was texting me, and I'm just like, I feel really genuine from the bottom of my heart. I really feel for people that don't have that motherly instinct in their life. Because I think your self-esteem, a lot of it is like, I just, from day one, like, I always just felt love. And when you feel love growing up, like, I think it really molds you when you grow up, like, when you get that motherly love. Because you're like, I don't know, you just don't, like, for me, I guess I just don't feel like I need to prove anything to be loved.
Yeah.
I'm very competitive.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the father, the trauma father side. Like, I feel like I'm not enough. As in, like, I can always be more and do more.
Yeah.
But weirdly, I don't feel like that is what would give me love. It's more like a, it's for me thing. When I think I'm not enough, I don't think it's for anyone else. It's not for anyone else's approval. I feel like it's this intrinsic thing. But I've never felt like, oh, yeah, I need to do this to feel love. So, listen, I guess that was a bit of a side tangent, but.
It is special. Having a warm home, someone that cares about you, that's real unconditional love. A mother's love. But yeah, going back to it, definitely. I think people are envious, bro. They never want to see you doing better than them. That's also another cliche, but we've done so much and more than people ever experienced in their life. Plus, we get all those other benefits that you just kind of mentioned, or privileges, that we're healthy, we've got healthy relationships, healthy companionships. Even if I'm going to speak about romantic relationships, like, the internet's just so toxic with both sides. Our men are so trash, our women are gold diggers, and we're just out here meeting just really wonderful people. And I don't know if that's because we're very selective and really good at choosing who we spend our time with, or if we just attract that by being that person. You know?
Yeah, I think that takes me to the next sort of big reflection I had about 2025. To me, it's not what you do in life, it's who you do it with. And I think so many people want this big, like, grandiose thing that they need to tackle, like, oh, I need to change the world by doing this, or I have this massive mission. And I think that's, like, it's beautiful to be mission driven later on in life, like once you, your family, everyone's good. But I think there's something beautiful in, like, I always give the example of, like, a cooking knife company. I don't think your mission or your company mission or where you work, I don't think the mission needs to be, oh, we're trying to change the world. I think your mission can be, we want to make sure that anytime you cook, you have a smile on your face. And I think as long as you just find something, even a small problem in life, and you make sure that you attach meaning to it and you pay it its respects, and then most importantly, you do it with incredible people. You know, it's funny, like, you think about all these places in the Mediterranean where they, like, drink red wine and they smoke and they eat carbs,
yeah,
and they live to, like, 100, 115. Why is it? It's because they just have a lot of love in their life, and they have a good social circle. And that's why for me in 2025, at least I realized, like, I would say, I don't know what we're gonna do in 10 years from now. Because, bro, I'll be honest, especially the last 2 years, like, we're in a lane and we're in a space that I never thought we'd be, and making moves that are so much bigger than I thought we'd ever make. But I just know that if we do it with people that we love, you can keep playing this game forever.
Building with it can, but it's not necessary, like you said, to change the world or build this empire. It's just problem solving and going through the motions with, like, people you love. Because it's those inside jokes, those hard days and fun days and successful days, and those moments that you share with those people are what make it. You don't remember all the expensive stuff you buy or the big milestones with the cash.
Mm.
You remember the little funny random things that happen on a meeting or driving to go sort out a license for a new office that you're getting, and something happens along the way and you're just with your people doing that. And it's the best. Mm. It is the best. And it's great that we've got this perspective from, you know, such a young age. A lot of people are stuck just working with people they hate, on a job they hate.
Life's too short to work with people you don't love and respect. It just makes the work so fun.
Yeah, especially when, like, everyone just kind of plays their role and respects your role and acknowledges what you bring to the table, and there's no ego. Just like we're all working towards a common good, you know? It's very refreshing.
It's important you say that because, man, there's just so many fucking things that you can do that I will never be able to do, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And if you can acknowledge it and give it the respect it deserves, and you can work as a team, as you said, understanding that us together is so much stronger than us separate, it's beautiful.
I think I get asked a lot by our clients and just people in the space that we always meet. They're like, why don't you just venture off from Iman and start your own thing, start an agency of some sort? Like, you have such a strong network, like, why working? And it's not necessarily they're prodding me to do that, they're just trying to get the answer out of me.
Mm.
Like you were even saying with owning a multi-billion dollar company, like just having a small piece in a big pie. I'd rather work in a bigger company that aligns with my values and my work culture and share those inside jokes and all that, but work alongside people that, you know, are I'm lucky that they are killers. Like, we're all like high performers, but I think that perspective comes from because I've done everything else before. I've done working in a corporate job, I've done running an agency myself prior to meeting you, working alone, working with people I don't really enjoy working with. Do you think it's hard to gain that perspective without life experience?
Like, one of the things I really wish, like, I've never had a job, but I wish I had, because I feel like it gives you so much context for what the world's actually like. Especially people see in this whole, like, online space, people's expectations are so muddied.
Yeah.
You know, they think everything's gonna happen overnight. And I get it, people say that we're a part of that problem. I feel like every year we upload our 10-year journey on YouTube, like, entrepreneurial career, the 9 year before that, the 8 year before that. So I always try my best to make it clear, like, this is such a long journey. But, you know, you've had that experience of working jobs, how hard it can be, how much you can hate the people you work with, how degrading they can be to you.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
For me, I had that with my mom. She had two jobs. She worked front receptionist at Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, which is tough, bro. NHS is public healthcare service. being the receptionist when people are coming in and like
shouting and
shouting. Yeah. And I get it, you know, you're in a heightened state. That, and then she worked at Harrods. and that can also be really tough, yeah. Bro. You go the opposite end of the spectrum. NHS is, you know, people who are in tough pinch and they need to get some help ASAP. And then you go to Harrods and it's, you know, more wealthy people. And bro, sometimes some of the stuff she would come back and tell me that people would say or the way that they would treat her. For me, I never forget that. I think that's why for us, we're always so kind and polite and respectful to everyone.
Yeah.
Because you experienced it firsthand. I didn't experience it firsthand, but through my mom, like that was just...
It is equally as close to you then.
Yeah. It was painful to see. So I think sometimes that's what I wish people these days. I get it. I get, you know, the 13-year-olds, the 14-year-olds, the 18-year-olds, the 21-year-olds, hell, even the 23-year-olds, like, going out there and you let me be an entrepreneur and this and that. But, like, I also just think when you live in the real world...
Yeah.
That's why I say, like, I genuinely, from the bottom of my heart, wish I had the experiences that you had.
Mm.
Because I didn't get to experience it firsthand. But I think it just gives you so much more context for what real life is actually like.
For sure. It makes... I mean, you see how often I express my gratitude, and like it's come so naturally, and that's because I think from those life lessons, life experiences. Waitering, working a corporate job, working a job with your boss is taking the piss and not paying you, treating you like shit. Yeah, I've done it all, and just makes everything that we're doing just that much more special.
Right. Cheers.
Salut.
A little bit warmer than our other location.
Yeah.
Your glasses look nice.
Thanks, bro. Unreleased.
Yeah, at the moment, unreleased.
Yeah, I actually think they're my favorite.
Big statement, especially now. We got a solid catalog.
What did 2025 teach you about sunglasses?
About the eyewear business.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that was one big takeaway from 2025. I learned to keep... I mean, I knew it, but you always kind of have to live through it. And to relearn the lessons. I've always been very good at keeping my passion away from like how I make my money. And by the way, that doesn't mean you don't enjoy, like that you shouldn't enjoy your work. I love our work. I find a lot of meaning in our work. And as I mentioned before, for me, it's also about who we do it with. Hills, which used to be Gadgy, was really just born from, I wanted to make a specific type of blue light blocker. Fuck, about 7 years ago. It's been 7 years. It was 2019. Well, actually, no, that's a lie. Gadgy started making clothes.
First. Okay.
Started making clothes in 2019. Then we went into glasses in 2020.
Yeah.
So we've been making glasses for 6 years. And it was always just like a labor of love. I just made stuff. I have this really bad habit, as you know, of just, hey, I want something that isn't available, like Big Day. And I'm like, oh, let me just create it myself. Which, of course, is generally... not the best way to run a business.
No.
You know, 2025, we brought on some business partners and, you know, of course, like the utmost respect to them. That didn't work out directionally, you know, the way we wanted to. And I think it simply comes down to like, if the strategy was executed, it would have worked. And by the way, but I just didn't want to execute the strategy. And what I mean by that is, I remember last time we were in New York checking our WAP offices, the fifth floor expansion. And this gentleman came up to me in the lobby and introduced himself. We have a few mutual friends. And he was like, a lot of respect for what you do, XYZ. You know, we'd love to sit down and have a proper chat. So I invited him. We were doing an omakase the next day for some of our friends in New York. So this gentleman's name is Hudson. He owns a company called Comfort. I will say the number here. And then, of course, I'll ask him after whether he's comfortable me kind of putting this out there. 2025, they did just shy of or just over $1 billion. Of course, you know, when you're sat down next to someone who in e-com is doing $1 billion a year, I asked him like, okay, for Hills, what would you do? And he's like, okay, you gotta make it $60. The price point $60 to $70. You gotta do buy two, get one free. You have to activate TikTok shop affiliates. Like, just ran through this whole list and he is 100% right. And same thing, you know, for example, even with the business partners we brought on, they kill it with their, you know, their other business. With a strategy that 100% works if executed, I just realized that with, you know, I guess some of the other stuff that we've got going on, even if Hills did $30 or $40 million a year in revenue with even 20% margins, net profit, you know, we worked very hard in life and we're very blessed and fortunate, like that just wouldn't change much for us, but the things you have to do to be a $40 million a year e-com brand, like you have to do a lot of things that I just personally don't want to do in terms of like direct response marketing, in terms of like, basically I just realized like Hills for me was born out of passion and I want to keep it out of passion. And I think that's great for our customers because I do so much stupid shit with Hills. The price point, how much we spend on packaging, making like crazy one-offs. And like, you know, right now we just produced candles. I don't even know if I'm even going to sell them. I've, you know, sent them to some of our top customers. Money clips, once again, I don't even know if I'm going to sell them. Like a lot of the things that we do make no sense financially. Listen, Hills still does whatever, multiple seven figures, low multiple seven figures in revenue, but that doesn't equate your profit. Like my goal with Hills is just run it for 10 years. You know, even if the revenue does get to 20 or 30 million a year, which I think it will do organically, because people, when they get their hands on it, it's just such a good product that they get hooked. But even when we're doing 20 or 30 million dollars a year, I don't want to make any money from it. Any money the business makes, I want to reinvest that back into the business, build the brand. And yeah, I just realized for me, that business, I just want to keep it pure and just for the sake of passion.
So there's building a cool brand or building a very profitable, scalable brand. Is that what you're saying? There's two avenues.
Yeah, there's just, at a certain point, you have to decide, am I doing this purely out of passion? Even if you look at like the biggest artists in the world, like, of course, they get to a certain point. They're like, am I making what I want to make purely for me? Or do I have to cater to a wider market? And it's the same thing even with like actors. If actors, okay, do I take this more mass, wide appealing role, or do I take this like super niche indie film? And I'm sure they do both and they try to do both.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I just kind of came to realize like there's certain things in life that should be left just as passion. And also just like, I mean, I'm sure, you know, even with our COO, Liz, like I told her at the end of 2025, unless we're losing money or like there's like code red, don't talk to me about projections. Don't talk to me about we need to hit these numbers. Cause like we were scaling up, like actually in the summer of 2025, we were scaling up quite rapidly, obviously spending a lot more money on ads. Also having to just do things that, you know, proper serious e-com businesses do that I just, as I said, I just didn't really want to. And yeah, I just realized like I just genuinely love the products that we make. I love tangible things. I feel like I have a pretty good knack for it. I have a pretty good vision for how to make things come to life. It may not be super mass market. It may not be your Ray-Ban or your XYZ, this company. But for me, like Hills needs to look a specific way. It needs to feel a specific way. Everything needs to fit in my vision. And whether that's fiscally responsible or not, and whether that means we make the most amount of money, I just don't care.
It's such a cool feeling just seeing people randomly pop up on your feed, on IG or your homepage, just wearing the brand. Like that's such a fulfilling feeling, right? Like cool people, it's like they chose to wear our product and post about it without us even not acknowledging, but knowing that they knew who we were.
Bro, crazy, like, I mean, we've seen it, crazy athletes, crazy, like the top football players in the world, like top artists in the world. Like even though they Liz sent me, there's like some Latin American artist with like 37 million or like 40 million followers wearing Hills. And like, we didn't send these individuals out, these like care packages, like respectfully, I didn't even know who they were. We've been making stuff for long enough now where I can see it. Like, you know, when you give your friend like your product and they use it once because they're being nice, or, you know, maybe they buy it to show support, compared to like, bro, I see people all the time. They're still wearing like pre-Hills Gadji glasses from like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, even our wealthy friends that before all they were wearing was Jacques Marie-Mage or Cartier, and now all they wear is Hills. Like, it's just, as an adult, you can always be honest with yourself. Like, have you created something incredible? And the answer is yes. And even like, you know, such a honor and a privilege that we were able to like help publish your book, because like for me, it was very important that we were able to make your book come to life in the way that we wanted to. And also like, it was a big pride thing because, of course, even though it's your project and it's your book, like the fact that we were able to help with on the production side of things, to me, when I hold your book, it's honestly the nicest book I've ever felt. Like the quality of it, the feel, the just everything, like it encapsulates everything that you are and encapsulates what Hills is. And I almost view Hills like a Chrome Hearts in the 90s, which is like anything it touches may not make sense from a commercial perspective, but it just, you just know it's going to be the best.
Yeah, that's a great position to be in, right? Because it's also one of those things that you're not chasing that instant validation, but I think it'll be one of those that like 5-10 years time, like Chrome Hearts just kind of just blew up. It's like you have this Heels lighter from the 80s, but from like the 2020s, or do you have the sick Heels belt or whatever the case is. So yeah, it's cool that you're differentiating passion and not necessarily profit, but
to be honest, I don't want the business to lose money,
yeah,
but no matter what our revenues are, I just want to plow.
To be honest, even if it was, you'd still be putting money into it.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Like, even if it lost money, it's just like, I love it that much.
Yeah.
Alexander's coming soon.
Ooh.
Alex has an iconic shape coming out soon. So you're enjoying Scotland?
I love it, bro. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. We got to come back more often.
Yeah, it's a good place just to like unplug, get away, reassess things.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that kind of relates to the next life lesson from 2025. I actually came here because in 2026, like I just feel such a yearning to, like, it's crazy. We've been in this game of entrepreneurship and also even creatively posting online for 10 years, a decade in the game. And I just feel so, I feel the most unaccomplished I've ever felt. And I wanted to get away and reassess and take a step back to decide what the next steps forward are. And it's interesting as well, of course, you know, coming off the back of like 2025 for us was just a generational year. There's a lot of things we don't disclose publicly, like, yeah, I won't get into specifics of it, but it was just, it's hard coming off the back of 2025 where there was just between WAP and between consulting.com, that was just, it was two massive moves. And then going, all right, cool, where do I go from here? I guess one of the things that I learned or I leaned into is, it's weird, I actually think you need to keep that chip on your shoulder. You know, like when we all start out in life, we have that chip on our shoulder that we want a better life for ourselves, for our family.
Yeah.
Whatever your chip on the shoulder is. And then you get to a point where, of course, like you accomplish everything. And I'm in this weird place where I feel like the biggest underdog I've ever felt like. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like what we've accomplished is super admirable, but it's so far away from the level of greatness that we could take it to.
Yeah.
As 2025 rolled by, for a second I almost thought like, oh, it's bad that I feel like, just for me personally, I feel like I have a chip on the shoulder. I still feel like I'm the underdog. I still feel like I'm underestimated. I actually feel like, if I'm being honest, like separate set of rules. Like if someone does something, they get a round of applause. But then if I do something 10 times bigger, like, oh, it gets swept under the rug, or it doesn't get acknowledged like the extent or the level it was. Like fucking buying consulting.com and giving what people paid $80 million for free to all of our customers going back to 2018. The stake that we bought in WAP, and the fact that, like, of course, bro, there's just so much shit that the internet doesn't see or the internet doesn't know. Of course I know, because I have the data room and I have the intimate details of every single business in the space, because, you know, WAP is by far my favorite company in the space. But it took me, listen, if I'm taking my big swing and this is my legacy play, of course I'm gonna evaluate all my options. And it's funny because, you know, when we buy in to have our stake in WAP, especially with the terms that we had it in, I feel like it doesn't get like acknowledged at the same level, even though our ownership is the same as other people we get compared to and put up against. Now, of course, as I said, I understand the internet doesn't know these things, but that's what I mean when I say like, I still have a chip on the shoulder, because if someone else does it, I feel like it gets put up in a different light. But if we do it, and something that's like so big, and especially with the consulting.com thing, like taking care of our customers all the way going back to like 2018, I don't know. It's just, I realized in 2025, like I definitely still have a chip on my shoulder. And at some point I thought it was a bad thing. And I feel like I'm underestimated, fully enough. And I actually feel like I'm the underdog. And I actually realized that was a good thing.
That's a great thing.
Like, especially 10 years in the game, you even see these documentaries and these books on individuals like Michael Jordan, and he would, like, even like 20 years into the game, he would find ways to like have a chip on his shoulder or feel like people were underestimating him. And he would almost create these scenarios in his head, even if they didn't exist.
Yeah.
So I just think as time goes on, there's certain beliefs or there's certain old habits or mental frameworks you do have to drop. But on the flip side, I also think you need to, like, I think you still need to keep some of that dark motivation.
It's a great driving factor. Like, there was a stage also, I can relate, maybe in the last year or so, you can get comfortable. There was pieces of me, I'm like, I miss not having the success that we have, because it was just so much easier to get up in the morning and be hungry. you know? So there was like a chapter where it was like, okay, we're working, but it's like, okay, like whatever we touch turns to gold, it's a bit boring, whatever. But, you know, there's new challenges now and there's new targets. And like you said, there's a newfound hunger in the team. And I can feel it as well. And it's a great driving factor. It's addictive. Mm. It's a drug. So to have a chip on your shoulder always is, even if you're creating it in your subconscious, is that's a great place to be, bro. Because you're gonna put in the work that you wouldn't necessarily always put in. Keep proving yourself right. Mm. So you're creating these scenarios?
No, I don't think I'm creating them. I think they exist.
Yeah.
If what we did, other people did, I think the round of applause would be 10 times bigger. And I think it's because of some of the things we mentioned throughout this video. I think fundamentally, people will just hate you with emotion and justify with logic.
People can't stand to see you win, especially so consistently.
Mm.
You know, I think we spoke about it earlier when we were fishing. Just, we got so much abundance, pisses people off.
Mm.
And also, we're not that type, like you said, we're not that type to be like, you with the best, blah, 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 blah. But, hello, my friend.
Anything else you want to say?
No, just no. Proud of you, bro. Let's keep going. This is our third one, huh?
Yes, sir.
Cape Town, Maldives, and now Scotland.
Scotland?
It's so cold.
Bro,